8 o'clock. It's Wine and Battle Wednesday. Jim and the Buckeye Boy from the Bozarth Miller Chevrolet Buick Studios, the most trusted name in automobiles. Or just a heads up today, if you plan on going to see CMU, CSU Pueblo in the RMAC baseball tournament over at Bergman, according to Dave Yonke, that game's going to start later than 3 o'clock today. A game will start probably around 3:30, maybe even 4 o'clock today. But we will have it here on the Team Sports Network, and then we hope to join Rockies, Giants in progress. Rockies losing 5-0 to the Giants last night. They are now 8-27. Yeah. But
How'd they ever win 8?
It's a miracle.
It's a miracle.
But the big story today, though, is, of course, the Avalanche rallying from a 3-0 deficit to win in overtime last night. Miles Wood gets the game winner in OT. As Colorado beats the Dallas Stars by the score of 4-3. We'll have a game 2 coming up tomorrow night right here on the team. Also, Jamal Murray. There was some concern that he might get suspended for throwing the heat compress and the towel at referee Mark Davis. He gets a $100,000 fine. But Murray also got lucky because he did the money gesture thing at Mark Davis, which Rudy Gobert did to an official this season, and he got hit with the same fine that Jamal got for throwing stuff on the court. So Jamal Murray could have been maybe $200,000 fine, maybe. So he kind of got lucky there. There's no place for what he did. There's no excuse for what he did. I don't care how much you love the Nuggets. I don't care how much you love Jamal Murray. This whole notion, like you said, of people saying, well, he didn't hurt anybody. Well, fortunately, he didn't. Fortunately, nobody tripped over that, slipped and fell on it. And my thing, too, is Jamal, what are you trying to accomplish by throwing that stuff at Mark Davis? You know what? Okay, you don't obviously didn't like the job he was doing. I get that. It was a very physical game. He got beat up a little bit by Minnesota, but so did Jokic. They're a physical defensive basketball team. How are you going to make that better by throwing that stuff at Mark Davis? How's that going to improve the situation? How's that Mark Davis going to go, well, I guess I made him mad. I guess I need to start giving him some calls because he's going to start throwing stuff at me?
Best case scenario you can hope for is what happens, that Mark Davis gives you the benefit of the doubt that, you know, I don't think he was throwing it at someone. It was thrown in frustration. Like, that's Mark Davis, why he didn't foul Murray more or give him a technical or reject him. That's the best case scenario. Worst case is you're responsible for someone on the Timberwolves getting hurt and you get sat down for a long time.
Yeah, I don't get it. I just don't get that he was so irate that's his way of dealing with his emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Do people get mad and throw things sometimes? Yeah, it happens. Sure, you probably got mad throwing something. I have too.
Yeah.
But in the course of a game where you're playing and you decide to start chucking stuff on the floor, I'm glad you didn't go Bobby Knight and grab a chair and try to throw it on the floor. I don't know what he was trying to accomplish there.
Yeah, I don't know what the end game was there.
Because his behavior was not going to make things better. And he should have been suspended. I'll die on that hill. And I want the Nuggets to come back and win the series.
Mm-hmm.
And they need him. They need him playing, though, like playoff Jamal, not toddler Jamal. Maybe a message should have been sent by the league. We're not going to tolerate this crap. And once again, if you're a Nuggets fan and you use the, well, nobody got hurt excuse, what is your problem? That's okay. That kind of behavior is okay. Just because he plays for your team? I think you and I have always tried to be this way. We're fans of our teams, fans of the players to a point. Mm-hmm. There's the fan side of us that we're home on a Sunday or a Thursday or whatever watching our team, and we're hoping they win. But then there's also the part of this where this job entails pushing that aside. Just because a guy plays for my team doesn't always make him right. And that's a problem I have with fandom. That's a problem I have with certain things, mm-hmm. is that just because he's on your team doesn't make it okay.
Right. Yeah, and I think that part of it comes along with being a fan of the team, is being able to say that, man, this is not... It's embarrassing to be a Nuggets fan after that. A little bit. Not like a, oh my God, I can't ever...
I'll never watch
him
again.
Geez, man, it's like you're making us all look bad here.
It's like, stop being a damn fool.
Right. And it's just, it's... He should have been suspended.
That's it in a nutshell.
That's something you can't do. And we had a texter, I can't remember who it was, maybe Ruben, that Jamal Murray's history is taken into account, because Andrew Rank says it, and Troy Rank rather, says it in the article on the Denver Post about, because of his character and his class, which even I raised my eyebrows about, because it's like, have you watched post-game interviews, character? Anyway.
He's surly.
Surly, and he's a red ass, and he's a pain. But he's our pain, I guess. And it's like, okay, maybe that had something to do with it. $100,000 ain't nothing, but it is kind of to an NBA player. It's like, meh. Hey, when you're making $30 million a year.
You don't like it.
Now you're making $29.9. You know, it's like, okay. Yeah. And it's also like, he should have been suspended. I don't care what his class, how classy of an individual he is, or his character. Sometimes that makes it worse.
Because that's not who they portray themselves to be.
Like, we would expect this from Draymond Green.
Absolutely.
You're more surprised when it doesn't. But I think Adam Silver in the NBA, like, they missed enough. Because now guys can be like, oh, I was just throwing it in frustration, and it accidentally landed on the court.
You didn't,
like, how can you suspend me because you didn't suspend this guy when he actually threw it at a referee?
And he did it twice. Like, it wasn't like he did it once, he did it twice.
Right. It's like, it's one thing throwing hands at other players, but that's kind of squaring up to a referee a little bit. You can't have that if you're the NBA. Not with the questions now and the intense scrutiny that officiating is under at the professional level, with all the gambling and all the money involved. You can't run the risk of players squaring up with an official.
And then there's the part of it that has nothing to do with whether it's right or wrong, because it's just wrong, and whether he should have been suspended or fined or whatever. It's, well, well done, Jamal. You've really proven, you've shown to Minnesota that they're in your head.
Mm-hmm.
Way to go.
Yeah.
Wait, where's the cool, calm, you know, exterior that you should have in a case like this where,
mm-hmm.
okay, we got to regroup here. We got dominated. We got our butts beat. We got to figure this out, but I'm not going to give them the satisfaction of reacting and losing my mind. Like we talked about the other day with Michael Malone and Aaron Gordon. All right, to a point, I get what they were trying to do. They were trying to protect their players in the case of Malone.
Mm-hmm.
Gordon trying to make a point for Nikola Jokic. They felt Nikola was getting whacked around by Minnesota. And so he got a technical foul. I get that. I understand that. But this seemed so petty, so childish, and just Murray kind of losing his mind because they were physical with him and he didn't like the fact Mark Davis wasn't giving him some calls.
Right.
And so now you've given fuel to the fire for Minnesota. You they physically dominated you, and now they're mentally dominating you because you can't control your emotions.
And for Minnesota, game plan going forward is there are guys on that roster that have six hard fouls in them.
Absolutely.
And that's all they really need to be used for. And if I'm the head coach who can't walk Chris Finch, that's neither here nor there. I just like pointing that out.
That but seems...
It's rude, but, you know, whatever. And so, like, I can run out a Shake Milton. Go out there and give me a couple hard fouls on Jamal Murray. Don't get teed up. Don't get flagrants. But go out to be physical with him. Because are they really going to need Shake Milton? Probably not.
Nah.
But if Shake Milton's out there, plays 10 minutes, has 2, 4, 6 points, a couple of rebounds, a couple of assists, 3 fouls, and Jamal Murray gets a technical, job well done, kid. Here's your per diem.
Absolutely.
You know?
It's what I need you to do.
That's now you've given the Timberwolves another route to victory. They can get you bounced for something they don't even really get in trouble for. Yeah, okay, there's 2 or 3 fouls. So it's not a good look for Jamal Murray on multiple different fronts.
And now with some time, will time, and like we talked about with Joe Sakic, making the comment, rest is a weapon. Will some days off here for the Nuggets be something that aids them? Will this be a time to evaluate where Nikola Jokic has to really do some soul searching and go, okay, Murray's not playing great. I've got to play like an MVP here. I've got to play like the MVP that I've been. I've got to elevate my game. Michael Porter Jr., same deal.
Mm-hmm.
Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, same deal. We've got to play better because that guy's not playing great right now. And if you're Jamal Murray, you got to look back at that and go, that might be the most embarrassing game of my entire career, both how I played mm-hmm. and how I behaved.
And
how do I respond to that?
With the way Minnesota played against them in game number 2, like out of the starting 5, Michael Porter Jr. has the thickest skin.
Yes.
Who would have ever thought we would have said that?
Because you think he would be the guy in the past
that would have a blow up.
And no, he's not.
He's not. Aaron Gordon, that one's understandable. I'm okay with that. Still, it's like.
He also didn't throw anything at him. He said something, but.
I'm okay with it, with kind of the point he was trying to make. But, like, Nikola Jokic is trying all of the things we hate about LeBron, saw a lot of in the Joker Monday night. Like, oh,
stop.
He shot me in the chest. It's like, stop. Just play the game.
My arm, it's broken.
Right. It's like, oh, did this crowd intimidate you? Nah, I'm from Serbia, brother. Well, then why are you acting like this?
Yeah.
Like, oh, he got me again. It's like, aren't you tough? Don't you say you're tougher in this because of the Serbia factor?
Your brother likes to punch fans in the face.
Right. Runt of the litter at 6'11", 280. Like, you got to be tougher than that.
And you've got to elevate your game. You've got to be the MVP that you've been. You've got to be that guy. You can't all of a sudden, like you said, LeBron flopping around and then start deferring to everybody else. There comes a point where you want Jokic to be the facilitator because that's what he is. He's the point guard of this team. Let's just be totally candid about that. But there are times you need him to get damn selfish. And this is a time where he needs to go in the low post and be more of a factor. And stop trying to defer and pass the ball as much as he has. That's great when things are flowing and working.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got to become the threat that they have to deal with. If you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
He has to become the threat they have to neutralize. And then other guys hopefully will feed off of that.
You have to force them to bring help and leave somebody else open. If you're the Joker. Like you
they're
have
not doing that, right?
They don't need to.
They don't need to.
Because Jamal Murray's not making any shots. KCP's not making any shots. Michael Porter Jr. is streaky, and everybody can pick up on if he's hot or cold. And Aaron Gordon's kind of there, but if you play in the right spot defensively, you don't have to send help. You're cutting off that passing lane. So the Joker needs to start scoring at that 35, 38, 41 popped just to get McDaniels off of Aaron Gordon or Gordon. KAT to get him to kind of slouch a little bit or come up strong a little bit, something. You need to do something to change the Timberwolves' approach.
Where Jokic has, they have to start doubling him more.
Yeah.
You have to make that happen. But Jokic, he's steak. He's an entree. Aaron Gordon, love him, great complimentary player. He's steak, fries, or baked beans, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The entree has to take over here and dominate. And Jamal Murray usually is part of the entree.
Mm-hmm. And KCP is a really good salad. Most of the time, it's a nice addition. There are other times where I just don't need it.
Yeah. All right, got one from Mark this morning. I agree with you guys. If he was on Minnesota, it'd be bellyaching. He wasn't suspended.
If that was Rudy Gobert?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh.
Well, you should ban him forever and send him back to France. He should be deported.
And he should always have to call French fries freedom fries for the rest of his life.
Freedom toast.
All right, 8:17. Time to go around the NFL.
The latest on the Broncos and the league. It's Around the NFL on the Jim Davis Show.
Boy, well, there's been joyous news where last Friday was, of course, Randy Gratishar Day, going to the Pro Football Hall of Fame in August. The guy that was his defensive coordinator, Joe Collier, sadly died at his home in Littleton on Monday night. He was 91 years old, architect of the Orange Crush defense. He spent 20 years in Denver from 69 to 88, where he innovated the 3-4 base defense and played, of course, that defense, Orange Crush defense, played a big part in the Broncos, making 3 Super Bowl appearances during his tenure. But Joe Collier sadly passing away at the age of 91. He had the second longest tenure among coaches in franchise history, trailing only Mike Shanahan, who was there for 21 years. So our condolences going out to the family of Joe Collier after his passing. Also, the NFL will release its full 2024 schedule coming up on May 15th. Notice that our folks, Infinity Sports, going to give you coverage of that. Once again, we know who they're playing. We just don't know the dates. So, but anyway,
they're taking alphabet soup, picking out each of the letters and putting them in order. Remember, that's the schedule release.
So, Pro Football Talk says from what they know right now, it's going to be the full schedule is going to be May 15th, 6:00 our time, according to Ben Fisher of Sports Business Journal. So that's when we'll find out the schedule for the Broncos and your favorite NFL team. All right, we will
Sorry, I know we got to get to a break. I'm hoping upon hope Browns at Broncos is the day after the Iron Maiden concert, so I can go to both.
So you can just stay over and that'll be great. Hopefully that'll work out.
Let's hope.
All right, 8:19 coming up next. Kirby Puckett Jr. and his sister Catherine. We're going to talk about their late father. Because the award this year for the most valuable player at the Junior College World Series will be named after their late father, Kirby Puckett, who played for Triton, Illinois in the series back in the early 80s. We'll talk with them coming up next on the Team Sports Network.
Stay by the radio. You're listening to the Jim Davis Show on the Team 101 FM, 1340 AM, Grand Junction. It's time to talk Alpine Bank Junior College Baseball World Series on the Team.
Series coming up Memorial Day weekend right here on the Team Sports Network. But this year, instead of the Preston Walker Most Outstanding Player for the Junior College World Series, it'll be the Kirby Puckett Most Outstanding Player for the NJCA Baseball World Series. And joining us right now, the children of the late, great Hall of Famer, Catherine Puckett and Kirby Puckett Jr. Catherine, Kirby, I appreciate you coming on this morning. Thanks for spending some time with us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Well, let's start out with you, Catherine, and we're going to get Kirby Jr.'s thoughts as well. But when you found out they were going to name the most outstanding player at the series after Dad, of course, came here and played with Triton, Illinois back in 1982, just, Catherine, give me your reaction to hearing that the award was going to be named after your father.
We are so honored, and I mean, we're so happy to be a part of this, and I'm sure my dad would just be thrilled to know that his name and legacy is still carrying on to this day. Honestly, it's a true, like, just, we're so grateful. We love it.
Catherine, did he talk much about his time when he played with Bob Simmons in Triton, Illinois? I know you were both younger when he passed away, but do you remember any recollection of him talking about playing in the Junior College World Series?
Yeah, I mean, he always talked very highly of it and how, I mean, this is how he got started and how much it meant to him that he just, I mean, he loved it to talk to us and tell us about his memories and to share the great excitement that he had about the game and just overall. I mean, growing up, we heard lots and lots of stories. So this was something that he was very proud of and continued to talk to us about as we aged and grew up with him.
Kirby, your thoughts about this, about the award being named after your father. Of course, you carry on his name as Kirby Jr. and just that, and your feelings about him being now represented. He's still tied for the batting average lead in Junior College World Series history here in the series. His legacy is still very strong. We talk about the Junior College World Series, but just give me your thoughts about the honor being bestowed posthumously upon your dad.
Yeah, for sure. So when I first got the message of him being on the trophy for the MVP, it was just, I was in awe when I first got the message. It was just such an honor for this to be happening. This is just a special moment for our family. We're just so ecstatic for this. It's just really awesome. So carrying on the legacy and the winners of this award should be really proud. And that's awesome that it's batting averages still remain. That really means a lot to us, so this is great.
We're talking with Catherine Puckett and Kirby Puckett Jr., the children of the late Kirby Puckett. The most outstanding player at this year's Junior College World Series will win the Kirby Puckett Most Outstanding Player Award. Previously was the Preston Walker Most Valuable Player, Most Outstanding Player here in the series. So, Kirby, let's talk to you a little bit about the trophy itself. Iconic picture of your dad in the World Series hitting the home run in the World Series against the, you know, and that fist pump, and it's an iconic picture of your dad. And I think that certainly that the gentleman that did the trophy, Matt Bennett, I think really yep. It takes that moment and really puts it there on the trophy. It's just an incredible picture that he was able to translate into this fantastic statue.
Definitely. It's awesome. It's a great, great statue, a great moment in history. And it was great because I got to be a part of it. So he was texting me during the process of him making it, asking me if this looked good or if this part was realistic. And I said, yeah, it looked great. So being able to be a part of the process of it being done and just seeing it come to life was just awesome. And I'm just so happy that it happened. So
we're talking with Catherine Puckett and Kirby Puckett Jr. Their dad will now have his name on the Most Outstanding Player Trophy at the Junior College World Series. Catherine, I'll go back to you. As far as things you learned from your dad, sadly, we lost him so early. And also, my condolences on that. He passed away. He was 45. You lost your mother about a year ago. And my condolences to both of you on her passing as well. But with your dad, what are some things you remember, some life lessons that you learned from your Hall of Fame dad?
I would definitely say being true to yourself was one of his biggest life lessons that he taught us, and to definitely follow your heart. He always said to be exactly who you want to be and don't try and change yourself to fit in, be different, be unique. It's okay to be different. And I mean, that was something he always preached the entire time. My mom preached the same thing, to be true to yourself, because I mean, things happen in your life that change you, but as long as you stay true to yourself, you're going to be okay. If you stay true to your absolute self, things will work out in your best place. So, I mean, that was one of the biggest life lessons that he always told us to don't try and fit in, to be different, be standoutish, to be the funny person that you truly are. And I mean, that was who he was. He always made us laugh. He always was a jokester. So, I mean, that was up until we were kids. It was always a joke and who can mess with whoever throughout our entire childhood. So, I mean, he was always a jokester in and out of the field. And my mom was very much the same way. And it was very, it's fun now to like think back of all the funny memories and things that he did and taught us now.
Kirby, what about you?
Yeah. So as a young age, my dad always said, be the best you can be. Whether that you want to be an astronaut, whether you want to be the president, he never forced me to play baseball, which a lot of people expected me to play baseball. But he always said, do what you want to do. Follow your heart. Whether you want to be an astronaut, whether you want to be the president, I'm going to support you in whatever it is. So that was really just growing up really helpful, just knowing that I had the support of my dad and my mom, of course, in whatever I wanted to do and not feeling like I had to be forced to be a baseball player like some of these other kids that you see with their dads are professional athletes. They follow in their dad's footsteps. But I follow in his footsteps in a different way, just being kind to people and just being the best that I can be on a daily basis. And that's pretty much the lessons that we were taught from a young age from our parents. So we follow that and keep that close to our hearts every day.
And like you said, you're right. I mean, you have the name Kirby Puckett Jr. There's an expectation that goes with that. For you, what was that passion that developed for you that wasn't baseball? What was that passion, or what is that passion for you?
You know, just being the best that I can be, really. Just living life and not trying to do too much, or just trying to help people along the way. You know, just if I see somebody struggling, I'm going to go help them. That's the type of person I am. So I'm always there for other people. I'm always there. If you need me, you can call me at any time. I feel like I'm a good friend to anybody who knows me. So I learned that from my family and my parents. So just always being there for other people and not being selfish. So I think that's the most important thing in life to be.
We're joined by Catherine and Kirby Puckett Jr., their dad, Kirby Puckett Sr., going to be on the tournament MVP trophy. And I want to ask you about your dad passed at such a young age for you guys back almost, 16, 18 years ago now. So you've kind of been the Puckett family spokespeople. What's it like being the kids of someone that is the author of one of the greatest moments in baseball history, just now being the spokesman for that family?
I would say it's an honor. We've cherished it. And I mean, we grew up going to all the events, even if we weren't on the field, but we were back in the kids' room and we were right there along celebrating. So, I mean, this is something we've grown up doing our entire lives. So, of course, we're going to carry on his legacy and be a part of carrying on the legacy as long as we possibly can. Because, I mean, this is something that our dad definitely instilled in us about making sure you carry on the legacy, making sure you honor our name, and just be a good person. So to carry on this legacy, to make sure it stays in great name and just as we have grown up, we love it. We are very blessed and honored to carry on his legacy and to be asked to attend events and do things for him. And I know he would be proud of us. Our mom was always very excited and happy for us and was always pushing for us to stay involved and to go to these events, because to carry on his name it's huge.
More time. Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Kirby. Go ahead and tell us what you think.
Yeah. Touching on that point, I think I forgot what I was going to say. Sorry. Go ahead.
That's okay. It happens to be on a daily basis, and I do this allegedly professionally for 3 hours. We're talking with Catherine Puckett and Kirby Puckett Jr. Their dad, Kirby Puckett Sr., his name will be on the MVP trophy of the Alpine Bank Junior College World Series. So I assume you're planning on coming out for Memorial Day weekend. You're just going to come out for the tournament, I should say. Probably championship weekend when they pass out the award to the most outstanding player. So I guess just for you guys, I mean, being on the field for that moment is going to be, I think, a special one, obviously, when you come out to Grand Junction.
Yeah, we're excited. We were actually there, I think it was 2007, when I think our dad was inducted into the Hall of Fame there. We threw out the first pitch, so we actually got to go to Grand Junction before, and it's a beautiful city. We're excited to come back, and we just cannot wait. So,
well, guys, I appreciate the time today. Catherine and Kirby Jr., thank you so much for coming on today. And I had the privilege of watching your dad play. I was in high school when he played, but when he was here with Lance Johnson and that Triton team, and Bob Simmons, and how Kirby became the most recognizable name until Bryce Harper. And Bryce has got a lot of work to do to catch up with your dad, by the way. A couple of World Series, Hall of Fame. Harper's got a lot of work to do to be Kirby Puckett, but he remains one of the, if not the greatest name to play in Junior College Baseball World Series here in Grand Junction. We appreciate the time, and thanks for sharing some thoughts about your dad today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Catherine Puckett and Kirby Puckett Jr. joining us on the program this morning. That's right. Yeah, early 2000s came out here and was inducted into the Hall of Fame. Mentioned that he recently posthumously went into the NJCA Foundation Hall of Fame.
That was also the 50th anniversary team, the gold anniversary team, I believe, 2007.
That'd be correct, yes.
So,
yeah.
Kirby on that.
And what's sad is he got glaucoma.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in the Grapefruit League. He was hitting like 344. He was just killing it in spring training. And then he started losing the vision in his right eye, got diagnosed with glaucoma, had three surgeries, could never restore the vision in his eye, and announced his retirement at the age of 36. And he was an executive vice president with the Twins after he helped lead them to two World Series titles.
Hit 318 over the course of his career.
And then just his number's been retired by the Twins, got retired back in 1997, his number 34. And he grew up initially in Chicago. And one of the stories I thought was interesting was when he was a kid playing flag football, that he was such an aggressive go-get-em, trying to win. They're playing flag football, and he tackled three kids on one play. And his dad said, Kirby, you got to settle down, son. You can't do that.
You gotta slow down a little bit.
Yeah. So, But grew up in Chicago, was born in Chicago, and there was some talk at one point toward the end of his career that he might get traded to the Cubs,
mm-hmm.
team that he followed, obviously, when he was a child, and that never happened. And I forgot who was the GM at that time in Chicago. It was a piece that I read, and he said, Kirby Puckett belongs to Minnesota. We're not going to trade for Kirby Puckett. His career's not going to end here. It needs to end in Minnesota, because that's where he's had his greatest success. We're not going to do that. And so, I mean, he was an AL batting champion in 89, RBI leader in 94, is in the Hall of Fame. He's in the Twins Hall of Fame, World Series champion in 87, 91, ALCS MVP 91, All-Star from 86 to 95, six-time Gold Glove winner, six-time Silver Slugger winner as well.
Five 200-hit seasons.
Yeah.
And he's had less than 1,000 plate appearances in the minor leagues.
And I just remember when he was here with Lance Johnson, and there was talking about those two guys they're going to be playing professional baseball not that long down the road, and they both were.
They both were.
Not that long after that they played here in Grand Junction. All right, 8:37, Jim along with the Buckeye Boy today from the Bozarth Miller Chevrolet Buick Studios, most trusted name in automobiles.
Lance Johnson also led the league with hits. In 1996, he had 227.
He was a heck of a player. Cal Daniels was here during those three guys. Mm-hmm. There really were the first three huge names.
He had 21 triples in a season for the Mets, Lance Johnson did.
Yeah. Tall, kind of wiry guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ohio guy.
But I just remember them playing here. I was in high school, and Bob Simmons, who seemed like he coached Triton, Illinois for 80 years,
mm-hmm.
Just had some great ball clubs, never won it, but came here with that team, and a lot of people thought they were loaded and were going to win it that year. All right, 8:37, we will take a break. And coming up next, Jamie Hamilton is in studio, chairman of the Alpine Bank Junior College World Series. We'll get his thoughts about Kirby Puckett, about the award being named after him, and also latest information on what's going on with the JUCO World Series. That's coming up next. You can text or call us today on the team line. It is a Wine About a Wednesday with Talon Wine, 970-242-1340.
Good morning, gentlemen. What are the haps?
The Jim Davis Show on Colorado's sports leader, The Team. It's time to talk Alpine Bank Junior College Baseball World Series on The Team.
All right, 8:41. Jim, along with the Buckeye Boy today, and always a pleasure to have the chairman of the Alpine Bank Junior College World Series, Jamie Hamilton, with us. And Jamie, I know you caught part of the conversation with Catherine Puckett and Kirby Puckett Jr., and they were out here.
Nice job.
Well, thank you. Well, I'll give Kenny Johnson a lot of the credit. He's the one who got me in touch with Kirby Jr. and has also been really involved in the trophy. Kind of take us through the decision to have Kirby Puckett's name on the trophy. It's been the Preston Walker Most Outstanding Player for a very, very long time. Why the change? And obviously Kirby Puckett, to me, makes total sense to have it named after him.
Well, he was brought to our attention a couple years ago that it'd really be important to recognize someone that actually played in this tournament that ended up having a career such as Kirby. And in all due respect to Preston Walker, been a great supporter and was involved with JUCO at the very start. It was a way to recognize him in a different aspect. And Kenny and Darren Coltenary brought it to my attention that maybe we could do this. I think we can get it done. And I said, like everything else, you need to get permission. And I know that we had met those two children when they came here at the 50th anniversary, so still had contact information with it, and Kenny ran with it. Great idea, ran with it, got their permission, as they said on their interview, very honored to create, remember his legacy. So then Kenny went out and found an artist here from CMU, Matt, as it is, that did the process, took a lot of time. It's a really unbelievable. It's sitting at my desk down at the office, and it's really spectacular, and it really encapsulates everything about him, and I think it's going to be a very nice award for whoever is the MVP this year.
Matt Bennett, the gentleman that created the award, and very talented artist, and it's the iconic, the fist,
yes,
the home run of the World Series that so many of us have seen so many times. And I just, you know, I was lucky enough to see him play when I was in high school, when he was here at Triton, before I got into to be involved in broadcasting the tournament. But, I mean, there was so much buzz about him back then.
Yeah, well, it's funny that I had just got back here and was coaching at Mesa, so I wasn't on the JUCO committee at that time. So my wife and I went to one of the ball games and were out there and way at the right field side and watching these guys play. And I remember Lance Johnson is that you already mentioned too. It's like, wow, these guys can play. And then Cal Daniels with Middle Georgia was on the club. And I was going, there are some players here. And I was trying to think in my coaching aspect of things that helping at Mesa at the time. And Kirby was just spectacular. And then got to, you know, follow his career. And then he actually, when my teammate with the Angels, Tom Bernanski, was traded to Minnesota and got a chance to learn a little bit more about Kirby because Tom's relationship with him there, and just a quality guy. And then, like I said, meeting the children, he's left a great legacy in both those young people.
And that's something that when we talk about the Junior College World Series, and I talked with Drew Goodman about this, about the impact that JUCO's had on Major League Baseball, from the Bryce Harpers, the Jay Buhners, the Curt Schillings, the Kirby Pucketts, the Jose Rosados. I mean, there's the Craig Kimbrels. I mean, and there's a, you know, 100 other guys I'm not even mentioning that are playing big league baseball. That how impactful the Junior College World Series has been to not necessarily just Division I college baseball, but to the impact it's had on professional baseball.
Yeah, and we've seen that, and you've broadcast, you and Real have done that, and seen the quality of these people, and as Drew yesterday in his interview talked about, is it a stepping stone to get to D1? Is it getting right into the draft, which was what JUCO baseball was before they changed the draft rules? It was really just go there and kind of hide out real quick and then get drafted quicker and sign earlier. But it's really a good job by the NJCA. I'd like to say a good job by this destination spot of playing in this World Series here in Grand Junction of recognizing those and promoting those. And so the NJCA has done a nice job with that of following up and getting that information. And as you will see in the program again, our people put together those guys that are making their debuts in the world or in professional baseball and or big league baseball. And it takes up a couple pages. Pretty impressive.
Yeah, like Drew Goodman was saying, he'll look through a roster and look at some bio information. It's like, oh, that guy played for fill in the blank for, right. For Chad Valley or somebody like right. that. And it's incredible. Or somebody like Marty Smith at Central Florida. And it's just, he knows JUCO baseball. And so he knows those programs and recognizes them. Practically every roster's got right. Couple of JUCO guys
right.
that and most likely have played here in Grand Junction and the Junior College World Series. Jamie Hamilton, chairman of the Alpine Bank JUCO World Series, with us today in studio on the Team Sports Network. Update on anything in terms of, like, banquet tickets? I know Patty sent me a little email that there was a hitch in the wagon came unhitched a little bit in terms of getting the banquet tickets out, but they're out now and they're ready to go. There's a little bit of a speed bump there.
Yeah. Well, just trying to organize things, and Darren and his team have done a really good job with that. But supply chains, and then we all also have full time jobs to do at the same
exactly.
time. But no, it's going well, and everybody's doing it with a smile, and we're having people come to the office that have been buying tickets with us for 40 to 45 years, and still can't really figure it out online, but Darren set up a little office at the reception area downstairs in our bank lobby, and are printing the tickets right out there for them right there, and people got smiles on their faces and walking off with those tickets in their hands. So lots of calls on it and lots of excitement about it, and now we start looking with playoffs starting this weekend,
right.
Getting some qualifiers, and then we start looking at what the weather's going to be, and so now it's getting down to crunch time, that's for sure.
So you've had electronic ticketing now for a few years. It seems like that's turned into a process that's worked out very, very well. Initially, like anything, in terms of a rollout, there's going to be some glitches, some problems, but just give me kind of your evaluation of where that is now, because it seems like it's, for most people, it's easy breezy. It's not a big deal, but you guys still provide, which I think is fantastic for those that can be sometimes electronically
You're
challenged.
Talking about me.
and that can be this guy too sometimes. But kind of take us through the electronic ticketing process, because it seems like it's worked pretty flawlessly here the last several years.
Yeah, we the first year was really didn't have enough information about it, didn't have some of the software and platforms to be able to use. Everybody got a little stressed out on it because it just wasn't working the way we thought to. So we went out on a bid process to people that specialize in those tickets and provide them for other major league teams or minor league clubs. And it's really been working without a real problem right now. And people are getting it. They understand it. I talked to our associates in our office, and they're doing that now with the Rockies. They're doing it with the Broncos. They're doing it with all sorts of different things, concert tickets, all those things. And so it's doing a lot better. And now we've got, again, the infrastructure at the stadium, so that when you walk right up, you can get that done real simple. And the Jackalopes group has helped us with some of their interns to do with that, and then obviously volunteers to take care of it. But Colt's got his hand around that and understands it a lot better than I do. And the good news is he printed out all my tickets for me. So
good job, Colt.
Personal assistant.
Good job, Darren. Personal assistant Darren Coltonary taking care of your tickets. Jamie Hamilton with us today. So latest poll, Gaston College, Sean Doty's team, top team in the nation right now. They're just 51-6.
Yeah. Well, it's I always watch that until you get to the playoffs. You've seen how Colorado Mesa women's did with the 33-0. Sometimes you got to fail before you get into that final stretch. But no, very strong. As we talked about, I think the East is having their playoffs this week and starting on Friday, and Florida will be geared up for it, and then Alabama has their playoffs as well. So we should have some qualifiers at the end of this weekend.
Yeah, I've got the South. That's, of course, Delgado, Nunez. Those are a couple of the teams. They're the top teams in Region 22. first games of the double elimination, or our Thursday championship is set for Monday. So we're now heading into that part of the season. But looking at the rest of the poll this week, Johnson County out of Kansas, second, Georgia Highlands, Iowa Western, Northwest Florida State, Florence Darlington, Weatherford College, Crowder College, Blinn, Indian River State College, your top 10 right now. So some very familiar names in there with the Crowders and the Blinns and the Iowa Westerns.
Yeah, and then Johnson as well is a very good out of Kansas. So we're gearing up, and as I think we've always, excuse me, always seen is whoever comes here,
right,
our people just get around it and get their newest love and support them for the entire week.
So we've seen replay come to JUCO, pitch clock now part of it as well.
Right. And we've talked about that, and last year we really didn't want to have those the actual clock out there because some of the teams that qualified really didn't have those resources, right, and we didn't want to scare them on those things. So we've got a really good system with our umpiring crew and then Kyle Rush down there on the field just to make sure it gets done and they still have their stopwatch and those types
of things.
So
no plan for the clocks at Saplesio just yet.
That is correct.
So this be still done on the field.
Yeah.
And then once again with the pitch clock, kind of like with replay, both worked pretty seamlessly last year.
Yeah, and then exactly right. But, you know, we've talked about, you've read the articles now with the pitch clock. It's an increase in arm injuries for some of the pitchers. They're getting out of their groove and those type of things. So we just didn't want to put that extra stress on that. And the Coaches Association agreed with us on that. And as long as the umpires are taking care of it and seem to have no problems or concerns last year.
You being a baseball guy, are you concerned about that? That maybe pitch clock? I mean, I know you're middle infielder, but you know baseball, you know pitching.
Right.
Are you concerned about the pitch clock having that kind of, well, while it speeds up the game, they're good parts of it.
Right.
There's also with increased arm injury, that's a concern.
Well, the arm, it looks like it's legit in everything I've been reading about it. But then to answer your question, as a player and as a former coach watching it, that sometimes you want to slow things down. You know, you want to say, okay, let's take a breath.
Right.
Let's kind of think of what we're doing. Let's think about execution. Let's do those type of things to make sure that we get done what we should normally do. And so I'm not a real fan of it. It's great if you want to get 2 hours and 15 minutes and know that you can get it done in that time. On a Saturday, I'm very much in favor of it.
Absolutely.
Because we have four games. We don't want to be there from 9 o'clock in the morning till midnight. But for the most part, I understand it. But as a loving the game that I do, I don't think it's necessary, to be quite honest.
Yeah, I understand where attention spans are shorter these days, which, you know, but I think that certainly if it starts to become a thing where pitchers are getting hurt, they're getting arm injuries because they're rushing, and that's part of the outcome of this. I don't know if saving 20 minutes is worth,
right,
or 15 or whatever is worth guys damaging their arms.
And like you said, just the tempo of it. Sometimes you just knew who your players were. Some of your pitchers liked to work fast when you were playing.
Yeah.
So you kind of knew that you had to be on your toes. Other times you knew that he's going to rub the ball and get it all done. And then you'd have to just make sure that you were mentally prepared for it. So I think it depends on the type of player that you have on the mound. But I think trying to force everybody into that same type of player doesn't really help the game.
All right, so don't forget we have the Alpine Bank Junior College World Series every single game right here on the Team Sports Network starting Memorial Day weekend. And don't forget, get your tickets online, jucogj.org. Website's been all refurbished.
It looks really good.
It looks fantastic. And so the banquet tickets are down in the JUCO office at a home loan. Those tickets obviously are still available.
That's correct.
See, Drew Goodman, I think, is going to do a sensational job speaking at the banquet this year. Really enjoyed our chat the other day, and I'm wishing him the best of luck the rest of the way. He's probably going to really enjoy
getting
away from the Rockies for a day or so to come over to Grand Junction where he can watch some championship caliber baseball.
There you go.
Here in town. not trying to dig on the Rockies, but they make it easier right now. Jamie, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
All right, hour 3 coming up.